Hi, my name is Christian. I'm an alcoholic. I think I'm going to use this. So thank you to the Roundup for having me and Rick for reaching out and asking me. Last year, Alex was actually the young persons in AA speaker, and that was really cool. And I've had the same exact thought about Alex, which is funny, which if he was a female, right, that would be perfect. And I don't know if the universe is like playing some sick joke on us or something, but yeah, it's messed up, you know? But what I do know is it's funny because I've actually used my relationship with Alex as like an example of what a principled, amended, kind and loving like relationship is, you know? And that's really cool to have that with someone, right? And that's kind of like what AA offers, right? It offers this like connection that's really kind of next level. But I'm gonna tell you a bit about myself. And I'm kind of a little bit struggling right now with this thing, as well as with many other things in my life. But we're going to figure this guy out. Here we go. All right. There we go. All right. I'm going to tell you. So my sobriety date is May 25th, 2018. I'm 25 years old. Got sober when I was about 20, you know, I do AA today. So in Recovery Service Unity, you know, I have a sponsor, and we worked the steps together, and we continue to work 9, 10, 11, 12, 10, 11 on a daily basis. We'll get into that. And then I also sponsor. I'm not sponsoring anyone right now, but I've sponsored people through the steps. And in terms of service, I have a few different service positions. I've got the home group, which is amazing. It's been my home group my entire sobriety. And I've held, you know, tons of positions on that home group. And then I've also been on many different service committees, going into, you know, juvenile halls and treatment centers and committees hosting conferences and things like this as well. And then unity as well, unity, that last part of the triangle, you know. I sit down with alcoholics one-on-one, connect with them, reach out to them, call them, the meeting before the meeting, meeting after the meeting, staying connected and in the unity of AA. And that's like in a really small nutshell what my AA looks like. And you know, I want to tell you my experiences, you know, what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And I also really want to talk about, like, all the things I've learned in AA, about AA, and all the things that, all the myths or, like, things that I thought were true. And then through, you know, reading the book more and listening more, realizing some different truths. But I also really want to tell you about, like, the stuff that's going on in my life, and not like just to talk at you guys, but just to get current, you know. But for me, my story starts when I was born, which is crazy, but that's when it starts. And I was born in New Jersey when I was 5 years old. I was sitting in class, and this girl in front of me that I liked held hands with another person, and I cried, and it was really sad. I cried, and that's like just for me. That's just the day that voice in my head woke up, right? Like that alcoholism, that judgment, that fear. All of a sudden, my feelings weren't just like feelings anymore. They were intense, and at that moment, I just wanted to separate myself from everyone and everything. All of a sudden I realized that all of you guys can judge me, and that terrified me. And I also realized I can judge all of you guys, and I did. And this was, you know, long before a drink, but it's like in that moment that I could have used a drink, because the insanity happened right there, you know. I said I was 5 years old. I don't know, actually. I think it was actually the first grade. I don't know how old I am in the first grade, but that's when it was. And that's in the first grade, and that's, you know, give me a drink right there because that I'm ready for it at that moment. And that's just my experience. And from then on, I had lots of experiences, like, with alcoholism, and I hadn't even had a drink yet, you know, just kind of with this insanity, this perception on life that was very, very separate. It separated myself from you guys, and it also separated from me, from anything deeper, from anything with meaning, you know. I was just separated from everything except for, like, me, myself, and that. That's what it was, and I was convinced that no one experienced life the way that I did, and that no one understood. And it's funny because I speak a lot about this, and I think that way today sometimes still, you know. And that's the craziness of this, is like, you know, I suffer from alcoholism today, you know, not back then, but a lot of what I tell you is going to be hindsight. So when I was in the first grade, I didn't know any of this stuff was happening. I just, like, cried. And I was like, what's going on? So a lot of this is hindsight. And a lot of what I tell you also will kind of not be from me. You know, I probably heard it from my sponsor or another sponsor or someone in AA or from the big book or from the 12 and 12 or from a speaker tape. Like, I really didn't come up with, like, a lot of the stuff I'm going to say unless it's, like, obviously my story. I just want to preface that because I don't know. For me, it's important to preface that. And at 7 years old, we moved to Japan because my father got a job opportunity. And it was kind of the same over there, the same kind of insanity, alcoholism going on in my mind. What changed was I started to find some outlets for it. So I started burning stuff in my room. My mom did not like that at all. And one time I burnt a full A4 piece of paper, and I thought, like, I just burnt the forest down. I was like, this is crazy. Like, what? And I just kept burning stuff. I couldn't stop. I was stealing money from them at, like, 7, 8, 9 years old. I was buying BB guns. I was stealing candy from this store. The bus used to drop me off. And I used to get off at the bus stop prior to my bus stop just so I could go to the 7-Eleven and steal candy. But what really happened in Japan is I got kicked off the bus, and it wasn't my fault. That's what we all need to get clear right here, right? But they told me it was my fault, and I got kicked off for, like, being loud or yelling or being mean to someone, and I got upset. I was so upset, and I was like, why is the world and all these people doing this stuff to me, you know? And what happened was, when you get kicked off the bus, you get kicked off for a day. But if you get kicked off again, then you get kicked off for 3 days. And then if you get kicked off again, you get kicked off for a week. And I was off for 5 weeks. And so I'm 8 or 9 years old. Now I've got to get to school without being allowed on the bus. And my school's an hour away. So that means first I take a taxi. Then I take a train. And I transfer to a different train. And then a different train. And then I take another taxi. Like an hour and 15 traveling across Tokyo, Japan at like 8, 9 years old all alone. And during that entire travel, I'm resentful at teachers, parents, older siblings, older people, right? Like the older people at the high school that got me in trouble, the older counselors, the principals, all of them, right? I'm resentful at all of them, and I'm becoming like self-reliant. Big time. It's just like, it's just me. I'm the only person I can trust. Like, it's just me here. And so this idea and this, like, pursuit of self-reliance came on at a really young age, you know, and all of these ideas and beliefs that, like, separate me from you guys and also separate me from anything deeper, anything greater, were just getting cemented in me at 8, 9 years old. Through my own insanity and my own, you know, I was eight or nine, so it's not like I had much responsibility I could even express, but that's just my story. And then we moved to Hong Kong. I knew alcohol was great because I saw some adults drinking it, you know, and they just looked like they were kind of connected. They looked like they were having a better time than I was. And like, what are the big people hiding from me? It's kind of what I thought. Like, what is that thing? Then my elder sister got drunk once. She was talking with the adults. And I was like, oh, is that like what that'll do for you? I just knew that there was something about alcohol that I wanted to give it a shot, you know? I wanted to give it a go. And I did. I finally got the opportunity. I feel like I fantasized about it for probably like a year before I finally got an opportunity to drink. And it was, I think I was 13 years old and I was living in Hong Kong, and some of the cooler people in my grade were doing a party, and I got invited to the party and I helped them throw it, and one of them told me they were going to take shots with me, and I said, let's do it. The party rolled around and I saw him like walk away. And I thought, well, we're going to take shots together. All right, whatever. So I grabbed the vodka bottles, like Smirnoff vodka, and I took a swig of it, or I poured it into a shot glass, actually. Took it down. It kind of hurt. And I took a couple. I took three or four. Long story short of the night, I blacked out, and I loved it. Short story long of the night is some interesting things happened. The first thing that happened to me, that right there, I could like take a breath, you know what I mean? And it was great. Not only was I having a good time, two shots in, I'm having a good time. My shoulders have just gotten low. My eyes went down a little bit. The smile's coming up on my face, but everyone around me was having a good time as well. Like, suddenly, just the vibrations and the colors just elevated. And it had a profound effect on me, an effect that, like, when my mom drinks alcohol, that does not happen to her, right? That does not happen to her. I'm having an experience with alcohol. Alcohol is doing something for me in that moment. And what also happened is what I know now, right, is something called a phenomenon of craving, right? I had a reaction to this alcohol, an allergic reaction, an abnormal reaction, to where I just wanted more. I blacked out. I couldn't even tell you what happened. I have, like, that cool kind of blackout memory where it's like, psh, psh, and you just get little flicks of what happened throughout the night. That's all the memory I have, right? And I was like, next morning, I was like, you know, just the normal that you get, let's do it again. I want to do that again. And so that's what I tried to do. I just kind of, from that point on, went to manage my life so that I could do that and anything that had to do with it again, you know? And that meant stealing, lying, manipulating, faking, avoiding, blaming, being mean, being nice, like just anything, you know? And that means my parents start locking their door because I just keep going in the room and stealing stuff, because they're giving me money and I'm coming back with no money. They're like, here's some money, have a fun weekend. And I've got like no money and I'm drunk. And they're like, what'd you do with the money? And I was like, well, you know, what do you think? So they start locking their door. So I start trying to kick it down so I can steal, you know. And so what's happening here is alcoholism, right? And I don't even know what's going on. I don't know what's going on, guys. I think I'm crazy. And not only do I think I'm crazy, I think everyone in the world is just against me for some reason. Like, why is everyone doing this to me? And that kept me in such a delusion for so long because I had no idea how to take any responsibility for me or my life. It was just so easy to say, like, wait a second, why are you calling the cops on me? Like, this is all your fault, you know? So my life got crazy pretty quick. School, yeah, forget about school. It's not something we're interested in anymore. And like I said, all those things I listed off earlier, that's what I'm doing. And some interesting things started to happen. Like, people started to tell me that I shouldn't be drinking and kind of doing the things that I'm doing. And my parents would say that too, and I would become furious. I don't know if you guys relate to that, but like it says it in the big book at one point, like they will either, you know, when their drinking is brought to them, they will either, you know, laugh it off or they become like irate. I don't know what the word that he used, but it says it's like one of these two, right? I went crazy. I did not laugh it off. I got mad. And I realize now why I got so mad, because alcohol was doing something really important for me at the time, right? I was suffering up until I had that shot. I was suffering in life, and I didn't even know it, right? I was before that, and then after, I've seen every life coach, counselor, therapist, psychologist, psychiatrist in Hong Kong, you know what I mean? And they're telling me that don't drink and take this and do that, and I don't even care what they have to say. I don't care. You know, and nothing's working, but alcohol was doing something for me. I didn't know this. Like I said, this is all hindsight, but alcohol's doing something for me, doing something really important. It's keeping me going, right? It's my only solution, right? Alcohol is not my problem. Alcohol is a solution to my problem. And so when people would tell me to stop drinking, or my parents would tell me they're going to like ship me off somewhere, I would get furious. And that's because basically what you're telling me is you're telling me you're going to pull the plug on me. You're going to take away the only thing that's getting me going, right? And so I lose it, and I get mad, and I need to keep, you know what I mean? I got to keep this stuff close to me and safe because it's the only thing getting me going. Like, you're telling me to stop drinking. Like, you don't understand. Drinking is all I can do. Like, that's the only thing. That's the only reason I'm still here with you guys right now. And so Hong Kong was crazy, you know? I woke up on a boat once in the middle of the ocean. I got like locked in a hospital holding room once, which is kind of crazy. And I had all the, you know, my parents would always call the cops on me. I was like robbing my friends. It was a failed school. And so I got sent away to this boarding school, and they like somehow made me go from a junior to like a senior. And so I did my senior year at a boarding school in Florida, and I'm still doing the same things, right? My perception on life is still me against you. I can't trust anyone. Everyone's out to get me, and forget all of you people, you know? That boarding school caused more harm there, you know what I mean? Like, just an absolute tornado, wrecking through the lives of everyone, uprooting relations. There's a little paragraph in the big book that, you know, equates, you know, my alcoholism to a tornado, and it's very, very accurate of a paragraph. And so that boarding school, I graduate from that school, high school. It's like I don't even know how. But I did. I graduated with a high school diploma. And then I went to college, and I went to college for a year in Southern Florida. And the progressive, right? This is a progressive. Alcoholism is progressive illness, and I kept experiencing that, and the delusion that my mind kept me in was eventually my life is going to work out, right? It was just like eventually, I remember once I sat there once in my dorm all alone, and I thought, am I going to do this forever? There's no way. Like, there's no way I can do this forever. I knew I couldn't keep this up very long. I was really going at it. And I knew I couldn't keep this up for long, and I kind of honestly asked myself, I was like, am I going to do this forever? And then, like, that little voice in my head, I was like, no, like, once you get a six-figure job, you're not going to do this anymore. And I was like, oh, you're right. Like, I just got to wait for, like, a six-figure job. And I, at this point, I'm in college, and I don't even have half a credit. And I'm supposed to have, like, nine at this point. And I've got, like, a quarter of a half of a nothing. And I'm over here thinking once I get a six-figure job, then I won't need to drink and live my life this way and do these things, right? And that's part of the delusion that my mind would like keep me in, you know, to keep me close to alcohol. Don't get rid of alcohol, Christian. That's a bad idea, right? Because my mind talks to me. My alcoholism is a voice in my head. I don't know if you guys can relate to that. But to me, that's not, like, alcoholism isn't a concept. Alcoholism isn't, like, some thing in the American whatever medical book or a word in the big book. Like, alcoholism is a current illness that I suffer from. It's active right now, right here, telling me you guys are looking at me funny. It's real. It's right. It's not a concept to me. It tells me things. It's a voice in my head. Luckily, I'm not my alcoholism. But another thing my alcoholism would say whenever I would have some kind of like open-minded thought around getting sober is it would tell me that the event, it would use this word eventually a lot. It's eventually your life is gonna the blocks are going to fall into place. Because I would look at some of my other friends that I grew up with who kind of drink like me, and they were passing classes, and they were like at some universities in London or whatever, and they were doing well. And so eventually that's going to happen to me, right? This word eventually was like really keeping me in delusion very, very well, very effective. Eventually the universe is going to call your ticket, number 5,432, Christian, you're up, you care about life now. And it's like, perfect, I'm going to go to school now. I'm going to pass classes. I'm going to hold down a job. I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to stop lying. I'm going to stop manipulating. I'm going to stop using. Like, I thought just the universe would snap its fingers for me. God would grant me as a normal human now, and I'm on my way. And so I stuck with that for a long time. It's like, yeah, eventually that's going to happen to me, right? Right? No, it didn't, right? What happened was I got arrested. I got kicked out from that school. Judge was like, it's time to go to treatment. And I said, I can do that for sure. I actually found this treatment center in Thailand to go to, right? Because my plan was I'll go to treatment in Thailand, and then I'll go to Hong Kong, because Thailand's right next to Hong Kong, and I just got to get back to Hong Kong. You know, just get me out of Florida. I got to get back to Hong Kong. So I'm booked for this place. I'm booked to go to treatment in Thailand, right? They're ready for me. I'm ready for them. And this isn't about being sober. This isn't about getting sober. The alcohol's not really the problem. Sure, should I drink a little less every now and then? Maybe, but an interesting thing, my eldest sister told me that, she said, what did she say? She said something very, it struck me. It just like, I don't know, maybe my mind was open for half a second. And she said, yeah, I think it'll be good when you go. Like, you might be able to learn something about yourself. And I thought, oh, wait, I realized in that moment, like, I might be able to learn. This is in hindsight. This is how I put it. But this is essentially what it was I might learn how to manage better, right? I might be able to learn how to drink a little less, care a little more, lie a little less, pass classes, go to work. Like, if I can just learn what's just like kind of wrong with me, like why I feel the way that I do, why I do the things that I do, I'll just learn a little bit about that, and then I can get on with my life. So I was like, okay, like maybe this will be useful. It had nothing to do with alcoholism. I didn't even know what the 12 steps were. It had nothing to do with alcoholism, drinking alcohol. I just thought they were going to like analyze me. I was going to ask questions. We were going to all get down to some weird brain stuff, and they were going to be like, this is it, so do this, and now you can do whatever you want. So I went there with this like shred of open-mindedness, and it was okay, maybe. Like, that was the idea in my head. I was like, okay, maybe they can help me a little bit, you know? But like I said, it had nothing to do with sobriety or anything like that, but I had that idea of okay, maybe. So I went there with this shred of open-mindedness, so okay, just maybe. And I did learn something. and I learned about alcoholism, and I also learned about AA, which is interesting. I learned, like, I remember when they first told me about what a sponsor was, they have something you want. And they said, do you know what that means? I said, yeah, if their car is cool, if their house is good. And I meant this, like, serious. Like, it wasn't like a joke. It wasn't like I wasn't thinking about it. Like, I stopped and thought about what they asked me, and I was like, yes, this is what you mean. Like, if their car and house are nice. Like, I kind of said it with this, like, I got the right answer. And they're like, no, actually, it's more like, you know, if they have similar experiences to you, or like their state in life and their mindfulness and their happiness is like something you want. And I thought, oh, like that made sense to me. I was like, okay, yeah, that makes more sense. And so I started learning about alcoholism. And I learned, this person kept asking me, almost grilling me. He kept asking me, like, why I did the things that I did, right? Not, like, drank, but he asked me, like, why are you robbing your mom? Why? Like, he asked me, I told him a lot of things, and he asked me why I did all these, like, this laundry list of stuff. You know what I mean? I remember once I walked in on my mom, and she was cleaning, she was filling the holes in the wall that I put there, right? And I looked at her with like such distaste. Like, that's my alcoholism. It's infectious, and it's like, and it gives me this horrible perception on earth. And it like, I didn't even care that she's like on her knees crying, like filling the holes in the wall that I had put there, right? All because she said like, hey, do you think maybe you should like drink less? So he's asking me why I do the things that I do, and I only had one answer, and it was, I don't know. You know what I mean? And that was like as honest as I could get, and I realized now like that's the truth. It was like, I didn't know why. And he asked me if I wanted to do them. He's like, do you want to do all these things? And I said, no. And so it's in that moment that I realized that I was doing things I didn't want to do, and I didn't know why I was doing things I didn't want to do. And when that internalized in me, that's another word for that is powerless, right? I was doing things I didn't want to do, right? I had no power to not do them, right? It didn't matter if I didn't want to rob my mom. I was going to rob my mom, and I had no say. I had no choice in the matter for years, and he was showing that to me. And I realized that, like, my life, I was being driven. I was being mind-controlled. I had no say in what I was doing. I was just doing things. I didn't know why. I didn't want to do them, but I was doing them. I was robbing when I didn't want to rob. I was drinking when I didn't want to drink. I was stealing and lying when I didn't want to steal and lie. And I broke down crying. I left the room. I sat out, like, on this patio. And this big Australian guy with tattoos all over him was like, "Oh, mate, what are you doing?" I was like, "I'm crying, man. Like, I was just having a deep talk, dude." He's like, "Yeah, keep it up, bruv." The reason I say that silly little thing is because this person, it wasn't crazy. It was like a 2-second interaction. But in that moment, I was like, keep it up. Like, this is like what I'm supposed to, like, these are the realizations I'm supposed to have. Like, this is, like, this stuff I just learned about myself. Like, this is the truth. Like, this is, am I getting somewhere here? You know? So that was like my first introduction. And it's funny because ask me the next day. If you would have asked me the next day, hey, Christian, are you going to drink again? I would have told you for sure on the weekends in like 6 months, right? So just because I had this deep realization and this step, whatever was going on, just because I had, it didn't, all it did was give me enough willingness to do the next action. It didn't like snap alcohol out of my brain. It didn't, you know what I mean? It was just enough to keep me sober that day and give me enough willingness to do some similar actions the next day. You know what I mean? I've never had this like snap awakening, here we go, I'm good. You know what I mean? This has been a very building block thing for me. And that was a major building block. And what happened was I related to the people at that place. And I'm a short little brown guy. These guys were huge, tatted up Australians. A couple people from the UK, a couple Middle East. We're in Thailand. There's people from all over. It was a weird place I was at. But I'm relating to these people, you know, who are like so different from me. But the way that they're talking about their life and the way they experienced it, I was like, wait a second. Like, you have experienced life similar to the way I've experienced life, you know? And that was so important, you know, that identification, that connection, because I can't do this alone, you know what I mean? And that was the whole thing, was like, I got to get sober alone, be sober alone, go through life alone, suffer through being sober because I can't drink, because I'm horrible alone, right? That's like that's what I think. That's like the delusion my head tells me. But then when I sit down and I hear this other person tell me their experience and I can like relate to it, I realize like, oh, I don't have to do it alone, you know? And that's the cool thing about being here in AA right now. Like, I'll never have to do something alone again. And that's kind of crazy, right? I used to think like, in order to never do anything alone again, like, I gotta have like a wife for the rest of my life, you know? And so now it's like, I gotta go find a wife, apparently. But AA, that's not the case. Like, I'm being in AA means I never have to do anything alone again, wife or not. So now we're gonna really, now we're gonna get to the good stuff. Because I get a sponsor. He says, I'd be honored to sponsor you. I'm like, I don't know what that word means, honor to sponsor me. What does that, what are you saying? He taught me about the set-aside prayer, and that was useful, right? Because my mind is filled with alcoholism. Ideas, thoughts, beliefs, stories, roles, scenarios, situations, realities, worlds. Sandy Beach has a funny talk. I think it's called My Own Little World or something, right? But that's what's filled up in here. But the set-aside prayer was so effective in it not like, I'm scared to go all in on things. I just want you guys to know that. So if someone's like, forget everything you know forever, no matter what, I'd be like, sure, how? Like, I don't know how to do that. But when you just ask me to set it aside for the next hour, right? Like, that I can do. That I can do. I can set aside what I think I know for the next hour, right? And I'm so grateful that that's, like, the message that was brought to me early on. It wasn't this, like, everything you know is wrong, all right? There. No, shut up and listen. Because I can't do that. I'm sorry. I can't do that. But I can set it aside for an hour if you ask nicely. You don't have to ask nicely, but I can set it aside for an hour. I could set it aside for an hour and be open to a new experience. But it's like a cup that's full, like you can't fill it up with more, right? It's the same. That's why I set aside so that like I can have room for something new, room for a new experience. And that's he had me write that very, very early on. And I appreciate that so much that he did that. And eventually I moved to Prescott because I was like, I can't sit here in Thailand and just be sober forever and be happy. And like, I got to like work and like go back to school and I'm coming back to America. So I left Thailand, came to Prescott, Arizona, went to a place where they kind of like help you get back into school, right? It's like, oh, you're sober and you want to go back to school? Like, come here. We're going to help you with that. So I went, right? That's where I met Alex, right? And this is where I really start to learn about Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book, and alcoholism, right? And from here on out, I'm going to have a bad timeline. So just, it could be this, I could have, what I'm about to say may have been from 2 days ago or 2 years ago. I don't know. But I'm just going to start talking now. But what happened was I would sit down with someone and he started to talk to me about alcoholism. He was showing me things in the big book, like the nightly review. And I was like, oh, this is deep. Like, why didn't anyone show me this big book earlier? You know what I mean? Because I was doing something else in Thailand. And he would always talk to me about alcoholism, which is like, yeah, obviously, right? But no, because I would go to him with like a school problem and he would start talking to me about alcoholism. And I was like, you misheard me, brother. I'm talking to you about like this school problem. And he's like, yeah, I'm talking to you about alcoholism. And when I started to learn, and I got so mad at him because I told him once, if I came in here and I was like, hey, I hit my head, like, and I'm upset about it. He'd tell me, like, it's because of my alcoholism. That's why I hit my head. And I was like, dude, I just hit my head and, like, want to talk about it, but I'm so grateful. And part of what he did was he was kind of practicing Tradition 5, which is a whole nother talk. But he showed me how infectious my alcoholism can be in my life. Like, it will impact every area of my life. Alcoholism has nothing to do with alcohol, right? Selfish, self-centered disease driven by 100 forms of self, fear, whatever, whatever. And I started to realize that, like, this alcoholism thing, like, every problem, like, starts and ends with alcoholism, apparently, you know? And the biggest one was I went to him and I was like, my roommate's annoying me. We had to share this, like, tiny room. And I moved all my stuff, and I got the whole room sorted so that he could, like, slip himself in perfectly, and his stuff could go here and all this, and he was being all dirty, and I didn't like it. And I was like, I'm upset, and I deserve to be upset right now. And then he showed me the actor's scenario, and my jaw dropped. Like, I was like, wait, that's what I'm doing. Like, I'm setting the stage. I'm managing everything here for an outcome, and when that outcome doesn't happen, I'm resentful, you know? And I think I deserve to be resentful because, like, I played my role right. Now it's time for you to play your role, you know? And if you don't play that role, you're doing it wrong, and I'm resentful. And I realized that my alcoholism had a role for me. It had a role for you and you and you. It has a role for all of you. And if you don't play it right, my alcoholism says, Christian, they're not playing their role right. It actually doesn't say that. It's much sneakier than that. But it says they're not doing that right. And it's time for you to be upset about that. And through you being upset, something is going to change. I promise. And I'm like, you're right. So I get upset. But what I started to learn as well was I started to learn a real, I call it a real step one, because my step one before that was a little wishy-washy, right? I used to think step one was I can't drink anymore. I can't drink anymore, right? And I realized that's not what step one is. Step one is like, I will drink again. Step one means I will drink again. I'm powerless. I don't get to choose if I drink or not. I started to really dive into what this word powerless meant, you know, through some really great speaker tapes, Mark H., Joe H., and I realized that, like, powerlessness meant that, like, I will drink again. It meant that the drink chooses me. Like, I don't have a say in it. And I used to think, like, a great step one statement was, I can't drink anymore. Like, I can't drink anymore. And I realized that, like, a real step one statement is, I will drink again. I don't have a choice. Lack of power is my dilemma. That means I don't have the power to say no to a drink. And what I started to realize was, in terms of the unmanageability of first step, lack of power is still my dilemma. I don't have the power to manage my school life. I don't have the power to manage my roommates. I don't have the power to manage my relationship life. Like, lack of power is my dilemma. Like, I don't have the needed power, right? And that can, like, rock me right into step two, right? All right, so where's the power then? like, do I believe? Am I willing to believe, or am I even willing to believe that there's a power greater than myself, you know? And that's, early on, that was easy for me. I'm just going to be honest. I didn't have any, like, God, God's cool. God exists. I believe it. We all believe it. Then I learned that believing God exists does nothing for me. So that was sucked. Because I thought, if I believe in God, I'm good to go. And then someone said, no, you have to have trust in God, right? And you have to take actions based on trusting in God. I call them tractions, trust actions, right? So I take a trust action. But today, step two is still important, right? I used to think step two is really great for when you're first getting sober. And then you believe in something greater that can restore you to sanity, and there you go, right? And once again, through some effective speaker tapes, which are insane, I learned that, like, what's my step two today, right? Like, okay, I have a step two belief that there's a power greater that will restore me to sanity. Do I believe that there's a power greater that will take me to an experience of greater freedom than I've had over the past month, the past day, the past, like, minute, you know? And if my answer to that's no, then I believe in a finite God, right? And if my answer to that's yes, then it's like, how do I seek that experience, right? And the fourth step for me took a few different iterations. I've done some ineffective four steps, and I've done some very effective four steps. And I don't think I can, my gosh, if I was still doing ineffective four steps today, I don't even know if I'd be here speaking to you guys. That's all I'm gonna say, is that I've done effective four steps, and I've done ineffective four steps. And I'm very grateful that I've been introduced to effective four steps. And those are, like, right out of the big book, right? Like, here's the four columns. Here are seven areas of self. I'll show you right where the big book says them, right here, right? Here's what they mean, right? And what I learned on the other side of an effective four step are the words, like, I am responsible, right? And that's not, like, yes, it has to do with the responsibility pledge as well, but what it also has to do with is, like, I am responsible for my resentment. But not just that, I'm responsible for my third column. That third column of the fourth step inventory, like, I'm responsible for that, right? Like, I'm responsible for my feelings, not you. This is how I live my life, is you guys are responsible for my feelings, right? And I thought that was a sufficient way to live life. And then I realized that meant you guys had full control over me. That meant you guys control how I feel all the time. My entire feelings, my reality, my perception are all based on how you guys act and how situations around me play out, right? And Bill talks about that in the emotional sobriety letter. Like, we're putting our dependence on all these external things, right? Like, I'm going to be happy if, right? I'm going to have a good day if. I'll smile if. And I realized through some effective inventory that, like, I was living in a world where I thought all of you guys could make me feel, right? And I realized that, like, I'm responsible for my feelings, not you guys. And what I also realized is that 8 and 9 are really important steps, and that I thought they didn't exist because I made some amends to my mom and some other people. I made the big amends, right? Some old employees, some old parents. Not old parents, but like not like I have lots of different to my parents. And I forgot I still had an 8-step list. And Mark H. and Joe H., they say something real interesting, right, where it's like a lot of people have done 9 3/4 of the steps, meaning they haven't finished that 8-step list, and I haven't finished my 8-step list. And I'm grateful my sponsor has, and he's talked to me about this before, but, like, I went back and looked over my 8-step list and just realized that, like, I kind of forgot about it, right? And just thought, like, yeah, if I ever, like, come across these, I'll do them. There's a lot in there. And I realized that, like, and I got called out through a speaker tape that was, like, finished list, right? So I went back to my 8-step list. I cleared it up. I've got it now. I haven't looked at it for, like, 6 months. But I've got it, you know? The big thing with me, there's something that really sucks that I do, and it means I know more than I do. Like, I know, I can sound so good up here. Like, and I'm about to. I can, like, when I get into 10, 11, like, it's about to go off, guys. And let me tell you, and I don't mean this in a fuck, like, I know a lot. Like, I've listened to so many tapes, I've read the book, like, I've got some brain cells I've applied to this thing. I can, like, break down the 10 step into 12 and 12, and I know, and I've had, not only that, but I've had all sorts of insane experiences with meditation and breath and prayer and amends, and, like, I know so much, but, like, I know way more than I do. Like, I know probably 90% more than I actually do. And I used to take that a little bit as, like, ha-ha, that's funny, we know more than we do. But the ratio that it's at currently in my life is a little jarring. Like, I get that I'll never be able to do as much as I can say, right? Because I can say a million things in an hour, and I just simply can't do a million things in an hour. But for me, it's something that my alcoholism is so, it's cunning, it's baffling, it's sneaky, it's a voice in my head, guys. It's it will tell me that knowing is enough. Say, you know all this stuff. I'm so grateful I have a sponsor today that is acutely aware that just because I say something doesn't mean I'm doing it. Like, and not even say, like, yeah, I'm doing that. Like, I'll speak good to him. And he'll say, all right, you passed the test, right? If it's a test, you got an A. But, like, we're here. Like, that's not what we're here for, right? We're not here to sound good, right? It's like, what are we doing? And I just realized, like, I've had this realization recently that it says in the book, self-knowledge failed him in Bill's story, right? And I have a lot of self-knowledge. I have a lot of knowledge on alcoholism. I have a lot of knowledge on the steps. I have a lot of knowledge on the 10th step. The 10th step is not the nightly review. It's actually a paragraph at the bottom of page 84. You know what I mean? And there's an entire 12 and 12 chapter on the 10th step, and it's something that's done every day throughout your day. And I can say this, like, I can tell you guys all of this and then not do a 10th step for 6 months, right? And that's, like, so sickening to me, you know? It kind of sucks, but, like, it's really good when my alcoholism sickens me. Like, that's actually a good thing, even though it kind of sucks, because that's, like, that means I'm realizing something and I'm seeing something. But for me, guys, like, I'm going through a breakup, kind of. Kind of a breakup. Or a get back together, actually. Could be a right? What's the difference between a breakup and getting back together with someone? Who knows? I don't know. But that is painful. And, like, I'm really raw today, guys. Like, I can keep going. I can talk more about 10 and 11 and all. Like, I can talk a lot. And I kind of want to, too, because I love it. Everything in my mind disappears when I just get in this mode and I start talking and I'm just like, this is 11 and this is how you do it and this is how I do it and this is what I learned and this is what I used to think, and thinking like that was like that was a lie and this is the new realizations. But like it says at one point in the book, like, he couldn't differentiate the true from the false, right? And I think, like, for me, like, that's where I'm at in my life currently. Like, I can't differentiate, like, what's true from false. Like, especially pertaining to my current relations with a female, you know? And that's so scary. And the thing is, my alcoholism, like, I have alcoholism today. What that means is there are delusions, like, I'm living in that I think are real today, like, that, and I don't know where they are, but they're there, right? Like, is that not scary to anyone? I don't know who I'm talking to. I don't know, right? I don't know you guys, but that's, I know one of you, and he knows what I'm talking about. But, like, alcoholism is a progressive illness, and it says at one point, that, like, it gets worse, never better. And that's, like, sober or not, you know? And what that means for me is, like, my alcoholism today will drive me, you know? It will drive me. And that doesn't, and that's scary because I don't view myself as my alcoholism, right? You'll never hear me say, I don't want to go to a meeting. It'll be, my alcoholism doesn't want me to go to a meeting, right? And that distinction is very important to me, because if I think I am my alcoholism, then what's the point of this thing? You know what I mean? The whole point of the steps, it separates me from my alcoholism, right? And it lines me up with my highest self, with principles, with God, with something greater, whatever that may be, right? But, you know, I used to go around like thinking I was my alcoholism. I thought I was that alcoholism voice in my head, right? And today, like, I'm not. But the interesting thing is, when that's the only voice in my head, if the only voice in my head is the perception of alcoholism, then that's the only thing I'm going to listen to. That means I have no choice but to listen to that. So, like, today I have to seek a different voice. I have to seek a different perspective, right? Than the one in my head. But for me, like, I have this voice in my head and it will drive me, right? It says in about 100 forms of fear. Like, what? Like, that's so many. 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, right? Will drive me. Like, drive me. I'm not driving. Like, I am being driven by my alcoholism to do things, to say things, right? To look a certain way, to talk a certain way, to tell her this and then tell her that, you know what I mean? Or to tell him that and then to do this. And it's so scary because I've experienced a life being driven, where I'm driven. And it's super scary because, like, you know it's happening, but you can't stop it. And I've also experienced a life where I've been guided, right? God will never drive me, all right? Like, God is not here to drive me. This is my experience, is that God will guide me. Self will drive me, you know? And for me, like, I'm 25 years old. I've had one relationship in my life. I really have no idea, like, what's gonna happen. I'm so terrified of pain, you know, but, like, because I don't want to feel bad. I don't want to feel bad feelings. So then I make decisions on feelings, which is horrible. You know what I mean? I've realized something called discipline, which is, like, that means that even if I'm not feeling like it, I still do it. And that was mind blowing to me, because I thought that this whole world is based on feelings. Like, I do things when I feel like it. Like, and if I don't feel like it, then I don't do it, right? Then I learned, like, no, there's this thing called discipline, right? That means that you don't have to make decisions based on feeling anymore. You can make decisions based on principle, you know, based on suggestion, based on being amended. And for me, it's like being where I'm at, where like I'm about to graduate with a degree, and then I gotta go find a job, and then like I might move from Prescott, and I might move somewhere new. It's like when they said this was a design for living, I thought that meant like something else. I thought that meant that like I'd never reach places in my life where I didn't know, right? I thought that meant like, and I have a sponsor who doesn't tell me what to do, which is effective sponsorship, by the way. And I'll talk to anyone after the meeting about anything I'm saying. I don't, but he doesn't tell me what to do. Like, I don't, like, if I call him and I'm like, oh, what do I do? Should I take this job or that job? He's gonna say, you're asking the wrong guy, right? And by that, it means like, seek, you know what I mean? Like, I can't, all I can do is share you my experience, but like, he has no attachment to my actions. He doesn't need me to act any way for him to be okay. And I'm so grateful that I have a sponsor like that, you know? But like, this is a design for living, but it's not a design for Christian's life. So like, what's up with that, right? What that means is like, the big book doesn't tell me what job to take next, or what to say to the girl next, or like what to do next with this work thing, or it doesn't, the big book doesn't tell me that. And like, the big book is a design for me to connect with something that will show me how to live. You know what I mean? And like, it's not on me to figure out how to live. It's on me to figure out how to seek and create a relationship with a power that will show me how to live. You know, I used to think about it the other way around. I used to think this was like a program that's going to teach me how to manage well, you know. But really, it teaches me how to connect with something that's going to manage for me. And the thing today is like, I will be managed. I will either be managed and driven by my alcoholism or by God, you know. And it says in the big book, we let God discipline us. Another word for discipline there is manage, right? We let God manage us. We let God manage our lives through this simple way we have just outlined. And they went over like 10 and 11. That's what was in the pages right before that sentence. But it's just, I'm scared, you know. I'm 25 years old, sober, doing AA. My sponsor would tell you, like, he's not doing AA. He thinks he's doing AA. Which is, I'm so grateful I have a sponsor that just, like, is so rigorous, so radical with it. You know what I mean? Like, if I do 3/4 of a 10-step, it's like, you didn't do a 10-step. And I'm like, come on, I did 3/4 of one. And it's like, not in my book. And I appreciate that he's that way, because that's the type, that's what I need. Like, this is a life or death errand for me. You know, I can't stay sober off 3/4 of a 10-step, you know? But it's just scary to not know what's going to happen next, you know? And it's scary that, like, I'm going to feel a certain way. Like, I don't want to ever feel bad again. Like, that's what my alcoholism tells me. It's like, feelings are bad. Don't feel bad. Don't feel sad. And, like, the reality is I will, you know? Like, I will feel bad or sad. And I just hope that I get to meet someone that's going through what I'm going through, you know, because there is such a power in that, you know, when someone like gets to, because I've had some gnarly times in sobriety, right? Like year one, year two, year three, year two and a half was crazy. And so when someone comes to me along those lines, it's like, I get to breathe, you know what I mean? And I'm like, let me tell you about my experience, you know? And so Yeah, I think that for me, alcohol let me breathe. You know what I mean? Alcohol allowed me to take a deep breath. And like today, I've found a power that also allows me to take a deep breath. But like, I'm not cured. You know what I mean? Like, I still have to live this finite and imperfect life, which is like, I don't know what, that's just all I know. But like, it is like, to be able to have and like say honestly that like I have found the power, and I am willing to continue to seek that power that will show me how to live this life and that will like walk this life with me. And then outside of that, like, I've got this triangle of AA, of Recovery Service Unity, and that unity aspect, like, you guys, you know what I mean? What I was saying earlier, I never have to do anything alone again. Really? You'll be there for me? Is like some next level type of experience that like I didn't know that was in store for me. And I'm gonna be honest, like the past 20 minutes or whatever, like that's not, I usually don't share like this. Like, I'm usually like yelling about 10 and 11 and trying to sound all good and stuff, and like, it is great. Like, I did really want to do that, but I just also wanted to tell you guys that I'm really scared because I'm 25 and I'm breaking up with someone, but also not, you know, that funny thing. And also like I have this alcoholism thing that like is so infectious and so cunning and baffling and evil and mean, but like, it's not the enemy, you know what I mean? Like, it's God. Alcoholism came from God. It's God, everything or nothing. Like, I have alcoholism, you know, because there's a universal power. I don't know. That's weird. Yeah, I'm sorry, guys. You guys got a funny one today. Like, seriously, I don't normally share. Like, he knows. I don't normally share like this. But I'm happy that, like, there is a solution. That's my message at the end of the day. Like, there is a solution. I don't know. You guys probably all have more time than me. Some of you probably have less. Some of you probably know this. Maybe some of you forgot. But like, at the end of the day, like, even if I shared some like sad or like morbid stuff, like, I know today that there is a solution. And like, that's the message, like, I hope like we all get to carry today, like throughout this weekend and onwards. So that's all I have. Thanks.